Someone very profoundly once said many years ago that if fascism ever comes to America, it'll come in the name of liberalism. And what is fascism? Fascism is private ownership, private enterprise, but total government control and regulation. Well, isn't this the liberal philosophy? The conservative, so-called, is the one that says, less government, get off my back, get out of my pocket, and let me have more control of my own destiny.
Get off my back, get out of my pocket, and let me have more control over my own destiny. I think you probably relate to that, do you not? I do. This is the Daily Perspective Podcast for Friday, the 20th day of November 2020. Mark Congleton here, your sometimes humble host for this almost an hour of observation, insight, and a bit of absurdity from time to time. Hoping the last 24 hours has been good to you, that you and yours are doing well, and that you are maintaining an acceptable level of sanity in an insane world. And the world is getting more and more insane. Yesterday, there was a news conference presented by President Trump's legal team. And that is what we will be talking about on this podcast today. The mainstream press, the progressive press, same thing, has, well, actually almost immediately labeled the news conference as loony, bananas, fact-challenged, and crazy. It was anything but those things. It was actually very factual. It was truthful. It was not crazy. Bless his heart, Rudy Giuliani. I don't understand why the man dyes his hair, but he should pick a better hair dye product. And that in itself was laughable. I actually commented so on social media when little trickles of dark stuff started running down the sides of his face from his sideburns. The man, he's got some years on him. He shouldn't be vain. He should just embrace the years and let his hair go gray. But that's his business. Had it happened to someone on the left, and anyone had mentioned it, then everyone on the left would have gone into attack mode and defended the person for living their own life. It's their body, it's their choice, etc. But bless his heart, that was not a good look. But I honestly, I got to be honest with you, I was a little disappointed in some conservative information sources who decided to make an issue out of that when, honestly, it's a little embarrassing, but it's not an issue. Please, I know some of you guys listen to me. Ignore what should be ignored. And I know it's tough. I had a hard time. I just made an observation about it. Wow, that looks weird. But the focus should be on the content of the presentation, not on the appearance of those making the presentation. And so the distraction moved forward. The distraction by those who were easily distracted. Ooh, shiny. Those people felt like ridiculing Rudy Giuliani. And then trying to distract everyone from the facts being presented. Even over at Fox News. Fox News had a person on the scene doing a stand-up. And Giuliani's preventing what he's describing as a massive fraud. He said, and I quote, "This pattern repeats itself in a number of states, almost exactly the same pattern, which to any experienced investigator, prosecutor, would suggest there was a plan from a centralized place to execute these various acts of voter fraud, specifically focused on big cities. And as you can imagine, big cities controlled by Democrats, and particularly focused on big cities that have a long history of corruption." Then respected Texas lawyer Sidney Powell joined Giuliani at the podium, took over, and she appeared to be more than confident that she and Giuliani have enough evidence to actually overturn the preliminary results of the 2020 election, which, if true, means Trump will enjoy another term in the White House. But it didn't take but a few minutes after the press conference was over for a Fox News reporter to immediately repeat the network's narrative that Giuliani and Powell were all talk and presented nothing of note. Kristen Fisher was on the scene, and she said, "That was certainly a colorful news conference from Rudy Giuliani, but it was light on facts. So much of what he said was simply not true or has already been thrown out in court." She doubled down on her conclusion of Giuliani's presser, insisting that the former New York City mayor had nothing new after teasing earlier that the press conference would be a game changer. She said, "Giuliani, he opened by making this really bold and baseless claim that a lot of this alleged nationwide voter fraud that he's referring to all come from one centralized place. He called it a nationwide conspiracy, and yet he failed to provide any hard evidence to back up that one specific claim, especially when you're really dealing with a claim that cuts to the core of our democratic process." Can I just lay this little fact down for you? When you are presenting publicly your accusations in a legal case, you don't present the evidence you have. That is done in court. You don't bring the murder weapon to the courthouse steps for the press conference. You don't hold up the Ziploc bag with the bloody knife or the pistol or whatever was used to bludgeon the victim to death on the courthouse steps. That is presented as evidence during the process. And for reporters, even Fox News today, to insist that these people should be presenting their evidence to the press is asking Trump's legal team to present what they know to the public so that the Democrats can prepare, so the Democrats can cover, so the Democrats can start moving the gears and getting things in motion to cover up everything they've done. We're going to get into some detail. I've had some thoughts on this since it happened. I actually watched the entire thing live as it went down. And since then, I've had a lot of time. I've had the past, several hours to chew on all of this stuff. And my thoughts are actually reflected in an article that was over on American Spectator, and I'm going to bring that article to you in the next few segments. It may take the rest of the program. But what was written at American Spectator pretty much is exactly what I was thinking, what I was observing. And the writer there does a very good job of putting it into perspective and putting it into focus. So I'm going to share his words with you because, and I know that you've gone through this as well, where you're going, okay, that's A, and this is B, and this is C, and God, I wish I could make all these pieces come together in a way that's easy to understand. Well, this guy did it for me. So I'm going to share his words with you. But you need to understand that what happened yesterday was not a courtroom presentation. What happened yesterday was, and they said so, during the news conference, they said this was just basically a snapshot. This was an introduction. And that's all they were going to do. And when the press began asking questions, it was obvious that they were ignoring everything they heard. They had questions about, why aren't you filing suit here? And why aren't you filing suit there? And they were asking questions which cannot be answered. And in many cases, they know they can't be answered at this point in time. They will be answered at the appropriate time, but not at this point in time. And last night, as I was scanning through information and news, I began seeing notes about Tucker Carlson's show last night. I didn't watch Tucker Carlson last night. I don't watch him every night. I do watch him from time to time because he is interesting. But I have been in deep into actually binge watching some stuff online that I used to watch when it was all fresh and new, and I've been reliving the stuff, and it's been a lot of fun. As I have a couple of hours here and there, I'll sit down and binge watch some things, and I was watching that last night, and we're not watching the news. And as I was watching, I also had my iPad open, and I'm starting to see things pop up about Tucker Carlson, and people are just ripping Tucker Carlson apart for cutting down Sidney Powell and what she had to say, and the fact that she would not come on his show on Fox News and lay out her case. He told her that he'd give her the entire hour, would give her several shows to present the case if she'd come on his show. But she wouldn't. And after he and his team made several requests, she basically said, leave me alone. Go away. Since then, she has made a statement, and that is that if Tucker Carlson wants to present the case, he should do his own investigation. And he should. He should do his own investigation. He can find much of what she's found. I've seen much of what she hinted at in the press conference yesterday. I have seen the testimony of the person from Venezuela she referred to. I've read it. I shared it here with you. I have read parts of the testimonies of some, just a handful of the hundreds of people who have come forward and signed affidavits who have been willing to have theirs shared publicly. So the information is there, and what they're sharing is what is essentially publicly accessible, so that people can go search and say, yeah, that's true. That's what they were talking about, and that they will want to see more. So yesterday was essentially just an overview. It was an introduction. It was not a legal presentation. It was them telling the press, this is the direction we're going, and this is why. You have seen this, I don't know how many times, just as quick drop-ins from the news as something happens, and they're looking to fill time while instead of watching people on a set babble at each other and make assumptions about things. They will go live to some courthouse in some city somewhere as someone speaks to the press about the legal case they're about to prosecute, and they make general broad statements about what they're accusing, and they don't go into detail. They don't bring forth their evidence. They don't do that. As I said before, you don't trot out the murder weapon on the courthouse steps in front of the press. It's not what is done. But the press wants that done. And when it's not done, the press declares, this is all fraud. It's all fake. It's all been disproven. It's all unprovable, as Fox News' reporter basically did. And she's wrong. She's wrong about pretty much everything she said. She said so much of what he said was simply not true or has already been thrown out in court. Well, she didn't support her statement that it wasn't true. She also didn't support her statement that these things have already been thrown out in court. As Rudy Giuliani said yesterday, the only court case they've actually dropped has been one they didn't have to pursue any further because a judgment was made that they agreed with. And to say what they were talking about is simply not true is disingenuous. What the reporter was doing was stating her personal opinion and possibly the Fox News channel's position, which we're beginning to see more and more and more since the election took place. So Fox News is becoming less and less trustworthy, which explains why they're lagging behind MSNBC in the mornings and in the afternoons now. Fox News' ratings have been dropping. It's because they've lost the trust of the people. Coming up next, we'll dive into what was presented yesterday as the Daily Perspective continues.
You're listening to the Daily Perspective Podcast.
Well, Welcome back. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast for a Friday. Just looking at technical information in the break. I switched from Facebook over to YouTube for the live stream, and there was some issue this morning. So if you tried to watch this morning or participate this morning on YouTube, I apologize for the bobble. I'll get that fixed over the weekend. Sometime next year, Rumble will be taking live streams. That's an alternative video service, a lot like YouTube. I'll be moving to Rumble as soon as that happens, because YouTube is part of Google, and Google throttles and chokes down and censors things in their own way through YouTube. So I won't be there. Facebook also did something to me this morning. They put the Facebook page on restricted mode. If you have not gone to Parler and MeWe yet, I suggest that you do so. It will not be long until this kind of craziness just forces everybody who is honest and is expressing their views. It won't be long until this becomes a situation we just can't work with on Facebook and on Twitter and on YouTube. And already, Dinesh D'Souza, Dan Bongino, and others have just left YouTube and gone over to the other source, and over to Rumble. And they just link to their Rumble videos in their social media posts, which is what I will do as well. And no, it's not a video podcast. It's still just an audio podcast. And I put up, like right now, there's the curtain slide that's up there right now. I can transition. There's a slide of the flag blowing in the breeze with a logo over the top of it, which you can't see on the audio podcast, but that's what would be seen if you were watching the video podcast. Why? Because I don't have a set. I don't have a camera. I don't have this, and I'm not a video guy. I'm an old-time radio guy. So if you were watching me, you would be watching me from time to time looking at the camera and talking to you, but a lot of the time sourcing material, reading material, looking around, doing things that aren't really video friendly. And so that's the one reason I do it. The main reason, all I've got is the webcam that's in the computer, and it's a piece of junk. So why? And I'm not going to spend, at this point in time, I don't, like I've told you before, I don't make money off the podcast. So there's no budget to go buy a webcam. From time to time, I do blow some money repairing computers because they're old. And that's pretty much, I'm looking at my laptop, my trusty old MacBook Pro, and it, right before the podcast yesterday, it assumed room temperature, just bing, it just died on me. I had to restart it, reload everything. And I was still in the process of clicking links and reloading stories and things like that as the intro music was playing. And I'm seriously considering taking a little nest egg that I've had set aside for upgrading something else and buying one of the new Mac Minis with the M1 processors, and using it, dedicating it to handling what the MacBook Pro has been doing. It just remains to be seen. We'll see what happens. Okay, now back to what I was talking about yesterday. Scott McKay over at spectator.org, wrote an article. It's a bit lengthy, and I want to dive into it, and I will drop out and make asides from time to time. But I want to share what he says with you, because it's basically what I was thinking in the hours after the press conference yesterday. So here we go. It was an hour and 45 minutes of scintillating legal and political theater that emanated out of RNC headquarters in Washington, D.C. on Thursday, led by Rudy Giuliani, who for brief moments rekindles his persona as the U.S. attorney who took down the mob in New York, and star D.C. lawyer Sidney Powell. Team Trump made its case for a stolen presidential election. It was a memorable bit of American history. And what a case! What Trump's legal team, the players on which are some of the brighter stars in the legal profession, offered Thursday were allegations of the largest criminal conspiracy to corrupt the political system in world history. That isn't an exaggeration. It's what Giuliani and Powell, in particular, offered to the mostly hostile media who showed up to the press conference. The stock reaction to the presentation is what it's always been, namely that Team Trump is all allegations and no evidence. That reaction persists following the conference, and it says much more about those spewing it than the presentation itself. Evidence, after all, is something most appropriate to a court of law. Evidence is for a trier of fact. You do not see the prosecutor bringing the bloody knife to the press conference on the courthouse steps following the arraignment, and no one expects the prosecutor to do that. But that's what's demanded of Giuliani and Powell so far. Fox News' Tucker Carlson went so far Thursday as to castigate Powell for not coming on his show to present the evidence she's discussed surrounding computer election fraud. It's understandable he might want that, as it would be ratings gold. He said he'd give her an entire show, or even multiple shows, to present the case. And while at some point it might be a good idea for Powell to take Carlson up on that, before any evidentiary hearings have taken place in the two active lawsuits the campaign has filed, is certainly not that point. Powell informed Carlson's producers of that and told them to stop calling when they wouldn't accept it as an answer. So let's forget about whether Team Trump has met the media's evidentiary standard, which, as we know, floats about like a buoy in a hurricane. That standard was far lower when it came to the Steele dossier and the Russian hoax, after all, and it was certainly lower with respect to the New York Times allegations about Trump's tax records, or the Atlantic's unsourced or anonymously sourced allegations about suckers and losers. Just ask Facebook and Twitter, for example. Instead, let's examine the Kraken, which Giuliani and Powell clearly described in Thursday's presentation after Powell had promised to release it this week. There are lots of elements to the case, but essentially it boils down to this. The Biden campaign, in league with nefarious actors both domestic and foreign, who are invested for various reasons in replacing Donald Trump as the President of the United States, engaged in a rather brazen smash and grab of the 2020 presidential election. No, not brazen. That's not a correct description. Desperate is more accurate. Because what was done in the counting of votes in the election on November 3rd and days following is best explained, as Giuliani suggested, as sloppiness derived from a frantic struggle to produce votes for Biden at Trump's expense in key states. Initially, it was thought that those states were six: Pennsylvania, Georgia, Michigan, Wisconsin, Arizona, and Nevada. It now appears New Mexico and Virginia might be added to the mix, following investigations of irregularities there. In Georgia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, Trump had what looked like an insurmountable lead on election night. Then things changed. The media narrative held that this was always going to be the case because of the proclivity of mail-in ballots due to COVID-19. But why didn't that happen in Ohio and Florida, which have generally been considered the two most prominent bellwether states in presidential politics, has never been discussed by the corporate legacy media. Trump won both comfortably. The counting of mail-in ballots didn't materially reduce his lead as the night wore on. Florida counted the mail-in ballots first. Team Trump's lawyers say that in those four states, Trump's lead was larger than the Biden camp expected. And so the electronic manipulation of the vote through the private contractors working for local and state election officials to tabulate votes was not enough to bend the election Biden's way. What happened next made things obvious. The counting was halted in all six states in the middle of the night on November 3rd. And when it began again in the wee hours of November 4th, there were magically large chunks of votes coming in, which greatly skewed the results Biden's way. How did this happen? Team Trump says, essentially, it happened two ways. First, the vote wasn't just manipulated electronically, it was mutilated electronically. Large blocks of votes were entered into the systems in Pennsylvania, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Georgia, which eliminated or greatly diminished Trump's lead. And second, there were large numbers of fraudulent ballots brought in with all kinds of defects after the fact, and then counted illegally in cities like Philadelphia, Detroit, Milwaukee, Pittsburgh, and Atlanta. Those ballots started coming in the early morning of November 4th and continued until a bit after Biden has built his own lead, and Trump argues, on the strength of a large number of sworn affidavits from poll watchers dissident election workers, and others. They were grossly mishandled by Democrat machine functionaries in contravention of state law. Essentially, then, you have two lines of attack here. We'll break there and pick up after the break. But as Scott McKay has already outlined, you can see the direction things are going. And we'll follow those two lines of attack coming up in just a moment or so as the Daily Perspective continues for this Friday, November 20th, 2020.
You're listening to the Daily Perspective Podcast.
It's the Daily Perspective Podcast for Friday, the 20th day of November 2020. Hope you've got a great weekend planned. That in spite of all of the Rona scares, that you're going to live some life this weekend. We'll get back into the press conference story in just a moment. I got slapped by Facebook again today, and I mentioned this on Facebook. I was about to spread it to other social media, but I had issues and the whole YouTube thing. Anyway, just so you know, as a podcast listener, Facebook is cracking down on me more and more frequently now. And I'm not a big media company, and I'm not one of the big famous conservative celebrities. I just do what I do. I'm just a guy with a dog and a podcast. And I'm just talking about what I see happening. And they're cracking down on me for sharing information that I've found, which is sourced, backed up. And most frequently, it was about the coronavirus and wearing masks and such. And I shared a post that had been shared by Cheryl Atkinson, who is a credible journalist, not a progressive nutcase, about studies which show that wearing masks really don't make much difference at all. There's not just one of these sources, one of these studies, and it's not a crackpot study. There's some serious... The U.S. Marine Corps did a study. I shared that with you recently. And plus, there's been other studies done overseas. And they show that the wearing of the mask may be a wonderful leftist religious thing to do. Because, trust me, progressivism is a religion. Look at how they... Just look. It's more religious than it is anything else. And I got struck down for sharing false information. Basically, they just accused me of lying. And you've been listening for long enough, I hope, to know my stance on honesty. If we're not honest with ourselves, and we're not honest with the world around us, and we're not honest about life, and we're not honest about what's actually going on in the world around us, we're doomed. And that's what's produced the situation we're in right now, is a whole lot of dishonesty. So I'm not dishonest. I honestly tell you where I'm coming from, and I honestly tell you what I believe to be true. So I'm not sharing false information. I'm old enough to have a pretty good sensibility about what I'm being told, whether it's true or false. And that's one of the benefits of being 63, about to be 64 in January. It's one of the benefits of being an old codger, is that you've been through enough life and have enough life experience that when somebody lies to you, whether it's to your face, in print, just on the phone, just on the radio, when they're lying to you, you know. Something goes off. Little bell goes off and says, ooh, something's wrong about that. And you dig in and find out what they're lying about. And I just don't do that. Moving along, back to where we were. Essentially, then, you have two lines of attack. Powell seems to be the lead player on the electronic fraud field. She traced the ownership and participation of companies like Dominion Voting Systems, a Canadian firm doing business all over the world, which is a major supplier of voting machines to states and counties all over America. And Smartmatic, a firm founded in Venezuela by the allies of then-dictator Hugo Chavez, which got its start rigging Venezuelan elections and has since spread around the world. Smartmatic's board chairman is, or at least was until a few days ago, a George Soros associate named Lord Mark Malloch Brown. According to Powell, and corroborated by reporting elsewhere, though not in the legacy corporate media, Smartmatic vote tabulation is done not in America, but in Spain and in Germany, and then fed back into the election management software systems in America, which report the vote to media organizations like CNN, the Associated Press, and the New York Times. From Powell's statements and other critics of the 2020 election, there seem to be four main problems with the electronic handling of elections, any of which would be fatal to the public trust in the counting of votes in our elections. First is the presence of algorithms in vote tabulation software. Data from logs scraped off the New York Times election reporting portal indicates vote totals expressed with numbers to the right of a decimal point. You can't cast a fraction of a vote, but for several years there's been electronic tabulation software that allows for weighted voting, going all the way back to when Diebold voting machines garnered such a bad reputation following the 2004 election. There is zero place for algorithms in vote tabulation software. This is addition, not algebra. There will be more on this a bit later. Second, what appears to be instances where Trump votes actually decreased in some of the vote total updates in the data logs scraped from the tabulations. It isn't possible for a candidate to lose votes. That can only happen if votes are being shifted from one candidate to another, which is an allegation Powell is making. She says that shifting votes from, in this case, Biden to Trump is an actual feature of the software, and it can be done as a drag and drop. And she says this isn't just an allegation, but rather a fact discernible from the software manual found on Smartmatic's website. What happened in Antrim County, Michigan, where some 6,000 votes were flipped from Trump to Biden in a very conspicuous example, would fit this category of irregularity, though that has been chalked up to human error in the legacy media. Third, are the conspicuous large dumps of votes, nearly or completely exclusively for Biden, present in the vote total updates, something which is statistically improbable, if not impossible. These happened in Wisconsin and Michigan, almost at the identical time, early in the morning on November 4th, and generated no small amount of notice by those curious about the election returns. And fourth, and perhaps more damning than anything, are the very interesting line items in these vote total update logs, whereby long successions of updates saw Trump and Biden get identical proportions of each batch of votes counted. That is statistically impossible and cannot happen without manipulation. In Michigan, it looks as though there was the application of an algorithm that discounted Trump votes and generated a sizable statistical anomaly, wherein he underperformed progressively worse the more Republican the precinct. To be fair, Dominion Voting Systems has hotly, perhaps too hotly, contested each element in Powell's case, which is fine, as this is what an evidentiary hearing before a trier of fact is for. Let Trump's team present their witnesses and their data, and let Biden, the secretaries of state or other election officials, and Dominion, and the other contractors present theirs. Giuliani's presentation covered the other line of attack, which is old-fashioned vote fraud, focusing most particularly on Pennsylvania and Michigan, but also in Wisconsin. He discussed the multitude of affidavits alleging wide-scale irregularities in the counting of those mail-in ballots. Signatures not matched to those on file, the refusal to allow Republican poll watchers to be present to examine the ballots at the counting, batches of ballots being run through voting machines over and over again to run up Biden vote totals, truckloads of Biden-only ballots arriving in the early hours of November 4th through the back doors of counting houses, dead people voting, absentee votes counted despite ballots coming in from people who aren't on record as requesting a ballot, voters in Democrat counties being contacted and given the opportunity to correct flawed ballots, while voters in other counties not contacted with the same opportunity. Trump voters in Pittsburgh arriving to the polls on November 3rd only to find that somehow they're listed as voting already, and so on. Giuliani says this creates a clear violation of the 14th Amendment's Equal Protection Clause. You can't run one election in Democrat counties and another election in Republican ones. If the facts are as alleged, that claim is unassailably valid. Related to this is the drama unfolding in Wayne County, Michigan, in which Detroit sits. The two Republicans on that county's canvassing board refused to certify the election results there, citing massive evidence of irregularity in the counting. Both were called racists, and a local Democrat politician named Abraham Ayesh even revealed one of their home addresses, and worse, where her children go to school. That led to a temporary caving in which the Republican canvassers agreed to certify the election pending a full investigation by the state. When Jocelyn Benson, the Democrat Secretary of State on whose watch this circus has proceeded, refused to honor that request, the two Republicans stiffened on their refusal to certify the election. Now the legislature is calling for a full audit, and Benson has no choice but to perform one. What has happened in Wayne County is a prelude to the real strategy here. Team Trump isn't necessarily out to prove that the president beat Biden by X number of votes in Georgia and Y number of votes in Pennsylvania and Z number of votes in Michigan, etc. Instead, what his lawyers are trying to do is point out that because of the irregularities and manifest illegality in the vote counting in these disputed states, the results cannot be certified. There's no way to prove, because of the electronic and paper fraud in the counting, who won those states. And while they'll be in court presenting this evidence to judges, it won't be in an attempt to have Trump declared the winner of the election, though they'd take that if it was available. It will be in an attempt to enjoin the certification of the results in those states. So far, the suits are in Pennsylvania and Michigan, but the suits are likely in the other states as well. In Georgia, where the state's recount is an utter debauch, famed attorney Lynn Wood has filed a separate suit, making many of the same allegations Powell is presenting in the media, seeking on his own to block the certification of the election. And if the judges stop the certification of the results because the true results can't be known due to computer data being corrupted and fraudulent mail ballots mixed in with legitimate ones, all in violation of state law set down by the state legislatures as the Constitution provides, then it falls to those state legislatures to decide which slate of electors to appoint. Those legislatures, which Republicans hold a majority of, both houses in most of the states in question, then become the real deciders of the election. And they'll be lobbied accordingly. They'll be holding hearings on the evidence of Trump's team, that Trump's team is collecting. And they'll be deciding his fate not necessarily on media calls or unofficial and likely uncertified vote tallies. If it can't be really known who won the election based on the pollution of the vote counts, those legislators are then at least technically free to vote their conscience and the will of their constituencies. And we'll get back to the article after the break. We're almost there. As you can see, this article spells everything out in a way that's very easy to understand. And you need to grab it in the show notes today. I'll tell you more about that.
The Daily Perspective Podcast.
After the break. It's the Daily Perspective Podcast. Final segment for Friday. Where we left off. If it can't really be known who won the election based on the pollution or the corruption of the vote counts, those legislators are then at least technically free. Those state legislators, remember we were talking about them. They're free to vote their consciences and the will of the constituencies. Which I might add is the exact opposite of what the press has done. Most of them are Republicans. If you're a GOP legislator from Western Pennsylvania, say, and you're going to decide on a COVID shutdown and a ban on fracking with Biden or four more years of Trump, you have a clean slate to decide thanks to the sketchy tactics in Philadelphia and the inability to certify the election. How likely is it that you're going to opt for Trump's slate of electors? Pretty likely, no? Let's understand that should it fall this way, it's almost literally the worst way to win an election from a public relations standpoint. The left will howl that Trump stole the election. And there will be documentaries and news reports about his theft and the coup d'etat and assault of on democracy for decades. Almost certainly, rioting that dwarfs what happened this summer will break out everywhere the Antifa BLM crowd doesn't believe local law enforcement will intervene. There could be assassination attempts, physical assaults on people in random places for wearing Trump shirts or hats, resistance on a scale that greatly exceeds what happened after Trump won in 2016, a campaign to generate faithless electors that dwarfs the obnoxious 2016 efforts at pressuring or intimidating Trump electors. Those electors would likely need round-the-clock protection from law enforcement or other security personnel. Do you remember the 2016? As an aside, do you remember what happened in 2016? Do you remember how everybody, I know I was, my gut was in a knot. Please, please don't let these people be faithless electors. Let them reflect the will of the people. Because there was a strong push to have electors change their votes. A strong push. Can you imagine what the push will be should this election go the way the press doesn't want it to go? The way the Democrat Party doesn't want it to go? Can you imagine what will happen? Those electors will need round-the-clock protection. And the Democrats will do everything they can to make America ungovernable, leading up to and perhaps into civil war. Of course, based on the evidence Giuliani, Powell, and the team have presented, a Biden inauguration could potentially have the same effect with roles reversed. Run a failed election, Latin American election, and you'll get a failed Latin American country. We're all in a terrible fix. The corruption of our institutions, from the arts to the news media to our elections to our law enforcement and intelligence agencies, has made something like this possible. And it has stripped away the limits to which people will go in search of political power. People see it, which is one reason why a recent Rasmussen poll says only 41% of the country believes without a doubt that Biden won fairly. Only 41%. Those 61% say Trump should concede. They can see the abyss, and they're shrinking from it, even though they understand they could be faced with a usurper in the White House. They think that's a less terrible outcome than a possible civil war, though there is zero guarantee that they're correct. Now is a good time to pray. Pray for Giuliani and Powell, that they might bring the truth to those who can act on it. Pray for those judges and legislators, that they might have the courage to do the right thing despite the pressure, and perhaps real threats of violence they'll surely face. And pray for the country, that we might resolve this mess with truth and justice and come together to make reforms such that this can never, ever happen again. And that's the article by Scott McKay from over at Spectator, American Spectator. He puts into words essentially what's been on my mind since that press conference yesterday. We've been watching, those of us who've actually been paying attention, doing a little digging, as I encourage you to do on a regular basis, to do your own research. Don't just trust what you see, especially now. We can't trust Fox News anymore. It's been going that way for a while, and I don't know if you spotted this, but once the election was over, Fox News dropped all pretense. They are now just another CNN. Oh, yeah, there's a little bit of conservatism still going on there. Sean Hannity's still on there in the evenings. But when you've got somebody like Tucker Carlson, who is, and I'm just going to use the term, he's butthurt because he couldn't get an interview with Sidney Powell. When he's not happy that she wouldn't come on and reveal her court case on his TV show, then you have to question some things there. But you can't trust Fox News anymore. Fortunately, there is One American News, OAN, and Newsmax. Those two are not liberally biased, progressively biased, and you can get some straight information from them, and you should. And you should also do your own digging. And you should just ignore the legacy media, because the legacy media is deeply corrupt. It has decided that the progressive agenda, the progressive narrative is more important than the truth. And they will screen everything through the progressive narrative and then call it truth. And you can't do that. You just can't do that and live in an honest world. You just can't. I don't know that we're going towards a civil war. I don't know that we're going to watch cities burn. I don't know that terrible, horrible things are going to happen. But I do know that we have seen a taste of what could happen over the summer. If Trump actually does win, and does so in a constitutionally correct way, because the left will say the election was stolen. And the article is correct. There will be news reports and documentaries about the theft, and the coup d'etat, the assault on democracy. And it'll go on for decades. They won't let it rest. The Democrats in the House of Representatives will not work on anything at all that benefits the country. They'll focus their time 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, on impeaching the president. They will be dragging him and his staff, his people, his administration into kangaroo court sessions for the next 4 years. That's all they'll do. They'll occasionally put forth some sort of legislation which is ridiculous, that can't possibly work, that is just that's ludicrous. And then when it doesn't get passed, they'll complain and they'll blame the Trump administration for taking things away from the United States of America, for killing people, for hurting people. More of the same, but dialed up several notches. They will not just crank it up to 11. They'll crank it up to 15 or higher, because they know that what they'll have to do is completely and totally demonize and undermine a president who really does represent the American people and the Constitution of the United States. They will lie, and they will continue to lie, and the lies will get bigger. And those who recognize truth will recognize the lies for what they are. As I said before, that's one of the benefits of being an old fart, is that you tend to recognize when you're being lied to. But you can develop that at a much earlier age just by seeking out the truth. Remember what I told you? When my wife was a bank teller, they taught them to recognize the counterfeit money by teaching them every intimate detail of real money. You know what the real thing looks like. You recognize truth because you're familiar with it. And when the lie happens, you realize something's not right. Those little bells and whistles start ringing and whistling. The red lights start flashing and you realize, ooh, something is not right here. So learn the truth. Seek beyond the legacy media for your information. Familiarize yourself with the Constitution. This next one is going to be hard to do, but trust me, it's necessary. Dig into the Federalist Papers. Understand why the founders wrote the Constitution the way they did. Understand why. See their arguments back and forth and how they came to the conclusions they did. Recognize it for what it really is, not what the lying leftists tell you it is or should be. Recognize it for what it is. Learn the truth, because learning the truth helps you recognize the lie when the lie happens. And that's the most important thing. Seek truth, and the lies will be obvious. The left is lying to us about so much. The legacy media, the leftist press, is lying to us every day. They're telling us things which are not so. And you and I owe it to ourselves, to our children, to our grandchildren, to seek truth and to be able to tell the truth, to counter the lie when the lie is told. That's it for today and this week. God bless you. Have a good weekend. Enjoy yourself. Unplug. Have a good one. We'll see you back here Monday for the next edition of the Daily Perspective Podcast. God bless you. We'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Knock off now and take the next 2 days off. How's that?